Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. We're going to hop in our time machine today and visit the year 2018. You were using an iPhone like 8. And you'd never heard of COVID because it didn't exist yet. But really, what we're doing is re-ranking recruiting classes. And Max Olson, the portal authority, but also re-ranking recruiting class authority, because he's been doing this since the class of 2014, since he got to The Athletic. And this is, Max, this is the thing that coaches always get. Well, they should really do them after 3 or 4 years. And I'm always like, yeah, I started doing that in 2008. When I got the job at SI covering recruiting, and you've been doing that since 2000. You've been doing this really since 2014, 2013?
Yeah, I didn't do it nationally when I was at ESPN. I did it more on the Big 12 level, but yeah, kind of brought this over when it came to that. I do remember you doing it and doing a great job on it. And yeah, you're right. There are still a lot of coaches out there that say, well, let's see how these look 3-4 years ago. And when I reached out and said, hey, can I talk to Dabo for this? They said, absolutely, Dabo loves this. And maybe that's because Clemson's always good in it.
Well, especially
it always grades out really well. But yeah. Part of it is there are some coaches who believe, yeah, signing day is fun, but I want my work to be analyzed 4 years from now. I think it's going to look pretty good.
Well, and that's what's interesting about this. So well, let's go back to 2018, to the original rankings, and it's 2018 – 24/7 Sports Composite. Georgia's the number one class. This is Georgia breaking Alabama's stranglehold on the number one class, and there's some really good players, but the headliner of Georgia's class is a guy that we don't remember as a Georgia player, as Justin Fields.
Oh, yeah, he played at Georgia?
Yeah, it was that year. It was a thing. There were some questions. There was slight controversy.
We don't have to relitigate that in this podcast, do we?
We could. We don't really have. No, I mean, look, and I think you saw it this year with Stetson Bennett and the same. You know, they were in a weird situation at Georgia in 2018 because Jake Fromm, as a true freshman, had taken them to the national title game. So it was very hard to say, okay, we're going to dump you, and now we're going to start this other guy. But then we had just seen Alabama say, Jalen Hurts, no, you're not going to start anymore. Tua's going to start because he saved our bacon in the national title game. So, but it is interesting that's where you start. And Georgia still winds up having a great class. You didn't have the – and actually, in your re-rank, still number one. But let's go through your scoring system, because this is not just willing – like, where I messed up when I was doing it early on is it was – I'd say how many starters the class produced and how many championships the team won, but it was still kind of my subjective ranking. Like, you actually have some objectivity here.
The benefit to your method of it, though, is it doesn't take you a month to do it. So
that's true.
I don't think that's a bad method necessarily.
Well, and there's a class in here that we can talk about, like where it's ranked. You look at it and you go, well, no, because some of these guys are so important that they just overpower everything else. But for sure. let's talk about the scoring system first.
So I've been doing this, like you said, this is the fifth year we're doing it now, I think, at The Athletic. The scoring system's been the same every year in an effort to kind of be consistent. And it's pretty basic. Look, there are lots of different ways you could do this. There's much more advanced ways where you could go out and give some, grade from 70 to 100 to every single player out there and have a much more accurate rating. But we keep it simple with this and give players a rating from 0 to 5. 5 being the very best players in the class, all Americans, top 50 draft picks. You know, I think this year they're only 3% of all the players I graded got a five. It's a very small number, about 50 players or so. It's you know, national award winners, that kind of guys. A four is going to be a multi-year starter, and obviously you have to, you know, look at the team and their situation, because the COVID year kind of affects those numbers a bit. But yeah, multi-year starter, all conference kind of player, you know, really impactful guy that's play, you know, started 25 plus games in your program generally. A three is a solid 1 year starter or a really important role player. A two would be a career backup, someone who's maybe they've started a couple games, but they're not a full-time starter. And then a zero is someone who, a player that, made almost no impact, and left the program. That can be, you know, transfer, medical, whatever reason. And so really with this scoring system and the scoring, it's based on your average, right? Mm-hmm. So you're just trying to minimize your misses and get as many hits as possible.
Yeah. So yeah, you do the average. Georgia winds up number one with a 3.34. Now, Justin Fields doesn't count for Georgia because he's attrition.
He's a two for Georgia, right? He's a two because of his, you know, impact for whatever 200 snaps he played in the year.
Right. Yeah. Right. So he will, but as a transfer to Ohio State in 2019,
that'll be a five.
He will be a very impactful player. Yeah. So that's what this is fascinating. And this Georgia class, what's interesting is what the guy who may be the best player in the class was one of the lowest ranked. Mm-hmm. Jordan Davis.
Two of them. I mean, Devontae Wyatt was a three-star guy, too.
Oh, that's right.
Who had to go through a JC for a couple of years and come back. But, yeah, Jordan Davis, a three-star. I mean, I don't know how a kid like him gets committed to Georgia and still stays a three-star, right? But Jordan Davis, absolute freak. And, you know, that would be one where, you know, certainly you look at the class that Georgia signed, number one class, and you would say you expect a lot of this, right? You'd expect a lot of threes and fours and fives from a class like that. But I'm sure Kirby Smart and his staff are very proud of the fact that they can also take a Jordan Davis and you know, take a three star and turn them into, you know, a consensus All American, you know, first round pick kind of player.
I'd imagine they're more proud of it. And the thing about it is, I do wonder if that happens now, like if Georgia gets in on some three star guy in North Carolina, like Jordan Davis was, does that guy automatically get bumped to a four just because Kirby Smart knows what he's doing? And like, sometimes it doesn't need to be more complicated than that. Like, if Nick Saban thinks a guy is good, if I'm at 24/7 or I'm at On3 or wherever, I'm going to go, what does he see that I don't? Because he's clearly better at this than me. So
yeah,
I need to know why we've got him here. I do think that Georgia staff getting in on that kind of guy now does probably give him the bump. We've seen this go two different ways, though. I mean, like, we always joke about the Texas bump. Like, some guy gets an offer from Texas, he goes way up, and then, you know, those guys don't always pan out. But yeah, I thought that was very interesting, just the way this class, because Justin Fields, Cade Mays, Brenton Cox, all major contributors on other programs.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some good players that left that class, but it still panned out. And that's, you remember the time too, Andy, in 2017. I mean, Georgia built this with just a real extreme amount of momentum, in terms of
this is the first early signing day. Yeah,
it is. It's the first early signing period one. So you've got players that are, you know, getting to watch the Rose Bowl and getting to watch the national title game and factoring that into their decision for NSD2, but certainly the run that they had that year, you know, really built a lot of belief in Georgia. And you go look at this cycle, like, this is a year where Alabama only signed four of the top 100 players in the country, which is just super unusual. And a lot of them were all
stocked up from 2017.
That's right. That's right. And Alabama's 17 class is an all timer. And so some of those kids are probably smart to not go to Bama, but you know, they all went to Georgia. And so that puts that pressure on them that, you know, after you've lost that national title game, I'm sure you're hungrier than ever, but you've got this great class coming in and you've got to develop them and make good on really, really, you know, high level expectations.
So your number two class, if this class only had two players, Max, I think it would still be like it, from a subjective, purely subjective point of view, a top five yep. of this year class, if it just had Trevor Lawrence and Justin Ross, because there's a national title right there. Like Trevor Lawrence, because of what he was throughout most of that season, Justin Ross for dominating that national title game and being someone Alabama simply could not cover. But then I was at Clemson on the day of the early signing period, or mm-hmm. the first day of the early signing period, doing pre-playoff stuff. Because remember, Clemson was the number one seed the previous year. They got dump trucked by Alabama in the Sugar Bowl.
That's right.
But
that's right.
That same day, they had their on-campus playoff media day. They had Dabo come out and talk about the signees. As Dabo is talking, a story breaks out of Ohio where Jackson Carman had said Dabo told him that Urban Meyer is going to retire within 5 years. And everybody's like, oh, God, somebody has to ask Dabo. So I see Dabo, you know, Dabo What's gets it, done.
Did Ari break that back then? We have to go back and look.
It
that
may have been Ari, yeah.
That's right in Ari's wheelhouse.
So I was at SI at the time. and so I walk over there after Dabo's done. He's just kind of kibitzing with some people. And I'm like, hey, you probably hadn't looked at your phone yet, but this is out there. Did you say this? And he's just, he kind of gives a non-answer, which clearly means, yes, I said that. And
right.
I remember thinking at the time, I'm like, Dabo and Urban are not that far apart in age. They're pretty close. I want to say they're like 4 or 5 years apart. And I'm like, wow, that's going out there. Guess who was right?
Yeah. Guess who was right? And, Jackson Carman got to see Ohio State again, too.
Yeah.
That's funny how it all works out.
Yep. And then Darian Kendrick got to win a national title at Georgia.
And, after being and Carman's back in Ohio now with the Bengals,
yeah,
too.
So, yep.
What but world?
It is unbelievable. Xavier Thomas was, I believe, the Trevor and Justin were 1 and 2, but I think Xavier Thomas was number 3 in this class overall.
He was.
And, yeah. You thought, okay, that will be the heir apparent to this unbelievable defensive line that's leaving. He was a good college player. I don't know that he was the superstar he was projected to be.
But he's coming back for another year. Which is good. I think I wouldn't say that he can't still play his way back into potentially being a first round guy next year. He just had he certainly seemed like one of those players. And even Dabo Swinney said to me when we talked last week that's one of those players that you would have thought was a 3-and-gone kind of player for sure when he came in and was a freshman All-American his first year there. And in 2020, when you've got that first round hype on you, he had a rough year in terms of COVID and strep throat and having to that really set him back in his training. And he was supposed to take the redshirt year that year.
That's right.
And really was limited that season. Only started, I think, one game. So got back to playing last year, third team all ACC. Really interested to see if he can kind of put it all together here in 22. One of those guys that really would benefit from taking advantage of a super senior year.
Your number 3 class was ranked 22 originally. Mm-hmm. And then we're not going to go all the way down the list. We'll start bouncing around after this. But I'm fascinated by this one because this is Michigan. You got Michigan ranked number 3. And you look at this list of guys. And it's not just you think it's all guys who played on this team. But like Cam McGrone already in the NFL at that point. Yep. But Aiden Hutchinson, Jalen Mayfield, Hassan Haskins, Jake Moody, Ronnie Bell. Yeah, this was a really good group that at the time was viewed as a disappointment on signing day because they'd missed on some guy like Nicholas Petit-Frere, who wound up playing at Ohio State, was one of Michigan was one of his finalists, and he didn't pick them. And people were saying, oh, I don't know if Harbaugh is going to get this done. And this was – Harbaugh was not doing the crazy recruiting stuff anymore. He'd already said, I'm calming down on this stuff.
Well, that's why I'm sure to like the recruiting junkie, you looked at that class at the time and was like, this is a disaster because they had signed a top 5 class the year before. And that was that cycle that had all the headlines and hype and all that stuff. And so to you know, to drop down outside of the top 20 and lose some guys and lose some battles and all that. Certainly you'd look at it and say, you can't sign classes like this and catch up to Ohio State. But I think that sometimes, look, Andy, when the kids don't want to go to your school, sometimes you got to get really good at evaluating and make, you know, make good decisions in terms of who you're taking and minimize your misses. And in this case, certainly Aiden Hutchinson was, you know, he ended up being a top 200 recruit. He moved up towards the end of his senior year there after his senior season in Army Bowl and all that. But there's a lot of really good three-star players in this, like Hassan Haskins and Ronnie Bell, that, you know, multi-sport athletes that they did a great job evaluating and developing.
I remember listening to a podcast that when Jim Harbaugh and his dad had the podcast together talking about kind of finding Ronnie Bell in Kansas City. I remember texting Matt Dudick, who at the time was their mm-hmm. director of recruiting. He's now at Mississippi State, and you actually quote him in the story. And saying, wow, the Ronnie Bell thing sounds amazing. And how did everybody miss him? And he's just like, kind of late bloomer, you know, coach saw him and liked him, and there it is. So.
And that's, you know, that's where you get into, like, it's not really like a whole debate about stars matter or anything like that, but sometimes you do need to have these classes too, where at least, look, if you didn't finish where you wanted to finish, at least you feel good about the ones you did get.
Yeah.
And you also keep them on your campus, you know, just keep them on your campus and develop them into leaders and starters and stuff like that. And this is a class that certainly is not as sexy as they probably would have wanted at the time. And what you would expect it after another 10 win season. But, you know, certainly this is one that when you get to a playoff, you go back and look and say, this was a kind of a foundational class in terms of the roster today.
Now,
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I know I said we're going to jump around, but I do want to talk about number four, because your number four mm-hmm. is Cincinnati, and it's really interesting relative to the discussion we had all last week about Brian Harsin, because I'm convinced that entire smear campaign to get Brian Harsin was based on people at Auburn deciding, okay, this guy is not going to recruit the way we need him to recruit, because when your first full cycle class doesn't look like what you want it to look like, that's a problem, because usually you kind of announce who you are as a recruiter with your second mm-hmm. class. Mm-hmm. This is Luke Fickell's first full year in office class. This is his second class at Cincinnati. They're coming off a 4-8 season. This is the important distinction. Like I always explained, like Nick Saban's second class at Alabama, like they're coming off 7-6. They lost to Louisiana Monroe. Cincinnati was bad in Luke Fickell's first season. Like yep. They played hard, but they were not a good team. He sold dreams. And you say, oh, it's only the 49th ranked class. It was the number one ranked class in the group of five.
It was.
Clearly, Luke Fickell knew exactly what he was looking for.
Absolutely. And that's, yeah, when I talked with Luke Fickell, he mentioned, you know, maybe with that you know, with the transition class, you're really selling the dream. And sometimes that's easy, because it's easy to get kids behind this idea of you being really successful. Then when you go put it on the field in year one, it's a little bit tougher. You have to really find some kids that truly do believe in what you're doing, despite the results on the field. And in their case, they really kind of were able to build a class that achieved all the things they want to achieve at Cincinnati. Well, you know, they got good local players to stay home. Mm-hmm. And those battles were really important early on in a tenure, as you know, Andy. They were able to you know, certainly went on evaluations and in relationships for some players like Myjai Sanders, who is a player that had some academic red flags and I think had gone from Florida to Georgia for a senior year and stuff like that, and other schools had offered, but they stayed in it and they convinced him, we've got a plan for you. We're going to be able to get you in. And you can trust us to come here and maximize your potential. When you get players like that, when you get players like Alec Pierce, who is a, you know, multi-sport athlete out of Illinois that they just fell in love with, but other schools in the Big Ten certainly missed on, you know, you fill up on those kind of players that, you know, you think that you've got kind of a culture figured out, but these are the guys that come in and set that, you know, right. They really are. And this is a class that they really nailed it in terms of, you know, getting players that helped them right away and getting players that, you know, I think 10 of them started against Alabama in the semifinals. So this is a group that stuck together and really got a lot better.
Yeah, it's a building block class. But when you look at what the context of where they're recruiting from, it was a pretty amazing feat to even put that class together, given what they had to sell.
And what Luke Fickell said too is when I talked about, you know, why did you have so little attrition with this class? And you know, coaches like to pat themselves on the back and say it's our culture, it's the relationships, it's all the, you know, infrastructure we have here. He pointed out too, like, part of it was, you know, we gave them a lot of playing time early on because we had to, because we weren't that good. And so sometimes when you have that carrot at the start of the career too, it's not just getting those reps in as freshmen, but it's also sort of, you know, building up their belief that, hey, this is the place I need to be and I'm going to get better.
All right. So the one that, if we were doing the purely subjective ranking, I would be arguing with you about a lot is LSU. You got them number eight. Their adjusted average was 2.75. Now, Joe Burrow counts in this class because he came as a transfer. Clearly the most impactful player anybody got going into the 2018 season, because he becomes the 2019 Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick in the draft, leads them to a national title. But they also signed Ja'Marr Chase in this class. They signed Terrace Marshall. They signed Damone Clark. But as you point out, this is a very boom and bust class. Like, half of it gone, either to another school or just didn't pan out.
Yeah, and this is where it kind of, there's definitely a debate to be had there, Andy. Like, would you, if someone said, like, let's just judge recruiting classes by the five best players you got, like, I kind of get the argument.
Right. But you need the foundational pieces, too. And
you do.
And I think this kind of helps explain what happened. Like,
a little bit. Yeah, he certainly, Joe Burrow, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, I thought ended up having a pretty good career so far.
Right.
We'll see where it goes from here. but really some very, in terms of, you know, building a national championship team, some very important pieces that came in this class. Damian Lewis, the junior college transfer, who was really good on the offensive line.
Cole Tracy was a really good kicker.
Cole Tracy was phenomenal in 18. You know, I think Terrace Marshall probably doesn't get it, you know, all the hype that he deserved, because you're playing with Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, but he looked really good in 19 and in 20 before he opted out. So you've got the hits are there, and you needed those players.
Yeah.
This is just one of those classes where, you know, you had, I believe, nine players who transferred out without graduating, and only two of them really did anything for you on the field, and they are Kelvin Joseph and Dari Rosenthal, who both went to Kentucky.
Very helpful at Kentucky, yes.
Looked like NFL players at Kentucky, for sure. Certainly not busts. But, you know, this is sometimes these classes, they get dragged down a bit, because when you have, you know, 6, 7, 8 zeros in a class, that's going to affect the average. And that doesn't mean I think your class sucks. It's just that, and certainly in LSU's case, you don't have to hit on 20 players to have a great class. It's just some of these classes grade better than others because they did find 15, 20 players that really, you know, started or contributed.
Yeah. And that's what amazes me with some of these classes, that when a school can get 75% of them become major contributors, like, that is that's an incredible hit rate. Doesn't happen very often.
No,
but yeah, that's...
Let me tell you this too, and this is going to factor into this stuff going forward too. So I counted up the attrition rate on these classes, and in this case, like, you know, certainly I don't think grad transfers are busts. They stayed, they got their degree, they moved on, and a lot of times they did contribute to your program. But if you count all the players that left, transfers, grad transfers, medical, kicked off the team, whatever, quit the team. For these classes, Andy, the average was 40%.
Wow.
So, I think we all know that's probably going to go up here in these next few years.
Oh, yeah.
So, part of this is that you have that assumption that you're not going to nail 75% of the class, but can you nail the 60% that stayed at least, or can you get, you know, the difference between these classes that grade really poorly and the ones that make the top 25, even if they're not at the very top of the list, is even if you lost 8 players from that class, the bad classes got nothing from those players, and the okay classes at least got them on the field, got some contribution for multiple seasons. Maybe they started some games. That's one of these where a class can get really brutal is when you've just got all these players that did nothing for you.
Yeah, and we'll get to one of those a little bit later, because there's one that was a top 5 class in the original ranking, did not even make your top 25. But first I want to talk about a class that ranked number 105 in the original one. And the folks where I live will get very excited when we talk about this. But, you know, it's a different animal that this coach is recruiting for now. But Billy Napier takes the job. Let's go back to December 2017. Remember, Ray Anderson fires Todd Graham at Arizona State. He hires Herm Edwards and says, well, it's okay that Herm hasn't coached in a while because Arizona State has 2 really good coordinators that I like a lot that will help kind of guide him. Offensive right. coordinator was Billy Napier. Defensive coordinator was Phil Bennett. Within like Phil a Bennett. Week yep. of Herm getting the job, both are gone. Now, Billy Napier got offered the Raging Cajuns job in Lafayette, and he took it. So this class, which you have ranked 10th, they had an average of 2.73. They had a lot of major, major contributors to a team that won the Sun Belt this year. And if you look at it, because it's a transition class, so a lot of times with the transition class, it's hard to tell who did what. Like the guy that Billy Napier's replacing is on this list too. Dan Mullen's first class at Florida is ranked number 14 on your list and number 14 in the actual rankings. And it had Kyle Pitts, who had committed to the previous staff, had committed to the Jim McElwain staff. But then Dan Mullen got Evan McPherson to commit, and he got Van Jefferson to transfer from Ole Miss. So, like, both parties contributed. If you look at this Louisiana class, it is mostly Billy Napier. A lot of post-signing day commitments for Billy. But that's how that works at that level.
For sure, and I think the thing that stood out to me, and you're right, it's hard to figure out who gets all the credit for that, but in this case, especially when you're taking over a program for the first time and at the Group of Five level, you would kind of think that Billy Napier and his staff would go in there and say, let's just get a lot of transfers, let's get a lot of JC guys, let's kind of get rich quick here a little bit in terms of trying to get some veteran players in here to fill needs and stuff like that. And what I like about this class a lot is it's a lot of high school players. Yeah. And it's a lot of high school players that they, you know, probably like similar to what we said about Cincinnati, guys that they were able to go play early on in their careers and developed into multi-year starters. And that's the reason why this Louisiana class ranks so high. Now, you know, Max Mitchell's a player that probably there are some Power Five schools that should have taken him. He's a player that is really talented, and I believe is in Dane Brugler's top 100 for this upcoming draft. So they did hit on some premium players. I know Percy Butler's also going to the combine, but you know, is this and this is where I want to like make the distinction, because I can understand
Max Mitchell, by the way, 0 star,
yeah,
committed on January 19th, 2018. So he committed to Billy Napier's staff.
It's a good find. And there's a lot of these players that, you know, there's a lot of 3s and 4s in this class. And I want to be clear, because I can understand like the intent of this can get confused. I'm not saying that this Louisiana class has like a lot of players that are better than Ohio State's players. The purpose of this exercise is just to say, okay, who did you sign and what did you do with them?
Right.
You
know? How'd you develop
them? I understand it can get a little apples to oranges when you're doing Power Five, Group of Five here. But in this case, they built a transition class, which is really hard to do. And they developed a lot of starters, and they won a lot of games with these guys.
Yeah,
what is it, 33 games over the last 3 years?
And it's listen, what you do with the ones you take over, what you do with the guys who were already committed when you got there, matters too. Like Percy Butler, you mentioned earlier, he committed on June 16th, 2017. He thought he was going to play for Mark Cutsmith. So it's what you do when you get him too. And now I will say Billy Napier replacing a guy at Florida who did an awful lot with the guys that he inherited. He had three really great seasons with the guys he inherited. It's also about who do you get now. But the Napier thing's interesting to me because you've seen him recruit at Clemson. You've seen him recruit at Alabama. So mm-hmm. he's been at that level as an assistant. Can he marry that, you know, knowing what he's going after at that level with the kind of evaluation and development he had at Louisiana? And if he can, then Florida's got a chance.
Right. And it doesn't mean Florida's going to recruit, you know, classes that rank 25th or 30th or anything like that. They're not. They're going to have access to really
they're
good players.
They're going to have to be in the top 10 if they want to get where
they're
going.
No, absolutely. And there's an expectation of that for sure. But there's also, yeah, I think the track record here in terms of development at Louisiana and the results speak for themselves. But I think it should be very encouraging to Florida fans that, this staff, if you give them time and they bring in the players that they think are right for the SEC, and he's got the track record to I think, know that. I'm very interested to see what these classes that Napier and his staff put together there look like in a few years.
Look, what I just described, an assistant who recruited at a high level and then as a head coach was a very good evaluator and had, you know, a team that outpunched his weight, that also describes Dan Mullen. Like Dan Mullen worked for Urban Meyer. Mm-hmm. Got good players when he was an assistant for Urban Meyer. They had very highly ranked recruiting classes. They got superstars when Urban Meyer coached there. So, you know, this is the trick. It's hard to do, is what I'm saying.
It is hard to do. And there was something that was funny as I was going through the Florida transition class, which, like we said, you know, they did a pretty good job for a transition class in terms of bringing in players. But you go look at the hits, and there's only one player in that transition class who ended up being like a legit starter for them that plays defense, and that's Trey Dean. And, yeah. and sometimes that also comes home to roost a little bit down the road.
Absolutely, because Jonathan Grenard as a transfer, probably the best defensive player they recruited. Kyrie Elam
would be.
But Grenard had a instant impact, and that was because Todd Grantham had coached him at Louisville for
a
year.
He went heavy on offense. They reloaded at receiver and. Yep. The receiver takes certainly paid off and certainly Evan McPherson, you can't do better than him.
No. So
there's some good players in that class. And Kyle Pitts is potentially one of the best tight ends we've seen in a long time. But you've got to also kind of try to put together some complete classes.
All right. Speaking of highly ranked classes, big time prospects, I want to talk about one that is not on your list that was in the top five originally. And we talked about LSU. This helps explain what happened. USC, number four, they had four five-star recruits, including Warren G's son. One of those was JT Daniels. That was that was maybe their highest profile. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Everybody knew him because Equinemius had played well at Notre Dame, and who didn't love all the names of the St. Brown boys? But this was a class that had quite a few top 100 players, and it never really mounted much.
No, and you look at the big names on that list, and certainly Talanoa Hufanga had a great career at USC. Amon-Ra St. Brown looks like one of the best young receivers in the NFL at the end of this season. So there were some hits in this class, but you're right. The big names there, Isaac Taylor Stewart, Elijah Griffin, solid players at corner. But, did they get the superstars that they needed out of this class? No. Devin Williams transferred to Oregon. Nate Oate, just too many injuries. JT Daniels, gets Wally Pipped a little bit there with Keaton Slovis. But, certainly – in Stetson Bennett. Yeah. You know, this is a class that had a ton of hype on him, and you know, one of those classes that you need to build at USC where you keep the best players in California home. And this is the kind of stuff Lincoln Riley's going to be shooting for. But you've got to develop. You've got to take these players and be able to do as much as you should, as expected with them. And in this case, you know, I think there's probably five or six players you kind of put in the hit column, and then a bunch of okay players and a lot of misses.
Yeah, and you know, it's not a lot on the lines of scrimmage.
But 26th, you know, not a horrible class, but just certainly for what you started with.
Right.
You know, those players, I'm not saying those are bad evaluations, because sometimes they had bad breaks, but it just didn't all come together.
Yeah, and that's, you know, look, when you hit on a class like that, you gotta make some hay. You've got to be able to turn those guys into what... You're never going to be able to turn them all into what they're supposed to be. Some people are going to be misevaluated. That's just going to happen. But the misevaluations really should balance each other out if you're doing well. Like, maybe you misevaluated some at the top, but maybe you evaluated really well where some other programs missed, and then you get some contributors out of the ones at the bottom. And I think that's where, like, what Georgia does. And this is, look, it's not rocket science. That's why Georgia is the national champion. Because they hit on, like, Jamari Sawyer turned into a really good player. He was a one of the top guys in that class. Everybody wanted him, and he turned into the starting left tackle on a national championship
team.
Turned
into their best lineman, arguably. Yeah. Yeah.
But Jordan Davis was a guy that not everybody wanted. Certainly not everybody at that level wanted. And look at what happened to him. Look what happened to Devontae Wyatt.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of credit that's deserved there when you take those raw materials and you know, you take a Tyson Campbell and who's a, you know, five-star guy, and you plug him in as a freshman and he's an awesome 3-year starter. Like, there's right. So part of that is evaluation, part of it's just great coaching too, that you know, when you get these kind of players, it's so important that you take them to the level they're supposed to get to. And that can be tough because it's a very competitive roster and you've got classes that you're stacking and you're trying to recruit over these guys all the time. And so when they have a setback or an injury or whatever, then, you know, they're going to fall in a place like Georgia, they're going to fall behind and maybe they turn into a transfer or a bust pretty quick because you've already recruited over them. So you can make up for your misses a bit when you recruit at that kind of level if you're Georgia. But no, certainly you're right to take the players, the really high level players they have and then, certainly, as we saw with Georgia, they had to figure out the right offense. They had to figure out a lot of sort of things that to fine tune here in this 4-year period to go all the way.
Meanwhile, Alabama, only number 5 in this re-rank. They only had 2 top 10 draft picks in this class.
Only 2.
Just the 2.
So far.
But when you look at the year before with Tua and Devontae Smith and just it was unbelievably loaded in 2017. So...
And that's where it's like, I'm not trying to put too much on that because, you know, Andy, like, okay, so it's probably harder for the kids in the 18 class to get on the field.
Yes.
With how good the kids in the 17 class
were. Right, because a bunch of them played as freshmen, and then a bunch of them were ready to play as sophomores. So, you know, the math's not going to work out for you.
There is one fun note about that class, though. I went back, you know, a lot of these I go back and rewatch what they were saying on signing day. And in that class, you know, it was like palpable of like, you know, okay, yeah, Georgia had the best class. This is not the kind of class we expect and all that. But Nick Saban, one thing he said was, we need to reload in the secondary because we've lost a lot of guys. We've never been this low and all that stuff. And classic Nick Saban, you go out and you get Patrick Surtain, you get
Josh Jobe,
Jalen Armour Davis, you get Savion Smith. Like, you just go out and find starter level guys and play really well at Bama because they know what they're doing from an evaluation standpoint.
But interestingly enough,
also kids want to go to Bama. Yes. You know, pretty much.
But Nick Saban never gets enough credit for when he poor mouths. Like, he poor mouths accurately too. What was the biggest problem in the national title game that year? Secondary depth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And Surtain, you know, funny how this all turns out because Surtain was a huge recruiting win for them over LSU. And if LSU hadn't won that one, they don't have a spot for Joe Burrow.
That's There's a Garth Brooks
song in there.
Sometimes things work out. Sometimes I thank God for unanswered prayers.
That's right.
I know you love calling Baton Rouge, LSU people, but maybe unanswered prayers for that one. Max,
completely.
It has been a pleasure. I love this. I love these recruiting strolls down memory lane. We're going to do this again next year for sure. We're going to talk to you again much sooner than that because we have much portal authority material to go through.
Hey, portal's finally slowing down. Thankfully, it gave me some time to actually get this thing done.
Just until spring practice, baby. Once this depth chart starts solidifying in spring practice, it's going to crank right back up again.
Just a whole new batch of unhappy players. Here we go.
That's right. Max Olson, thanks so much.
Thanks, man.